Chapter 32.
So what happens next?
Jin looked up from the violet crystal in his skeletal hand. Laruna leaned against a ruined wall, arms crossed.
I think we're going to try to find Gorm before the meeting, said the Omnomancer.
There is much trying to find you, said the Solomancer. Half the city watched you fight your father alone, and the Archmagi of the Academy just saw the return of the Twilight Order. People are already talking, whether you're there or not.
Jin shrugged. I needed time to think.
Fair enough, said Laruna. She walked into the charred ruins where Jin had found refuge and sat down next to him on the steps. But I'm most curious about what you'll do with your father's phylactery.
Jin looked back to the crystal. He could feel the power and heat radiating from it, even in his fleshless hand. It was a matter of some debate whether a lich's crystalline phylactery was created during the transition to undeath, or if it was an ingredient of the dark ritual that prepared a mage for their dark transformation. Presumably, liches themselves knew, but they were both naturally reticent to talk about their soul weakness and eager to convert curious researchers into abominable unliving servants, and so the secret remained hidden from the living.
I don't know, he said truthfully.
They'll want you to destroy it, said Laruna.
Jin nodded. That makes sense, I suppose.
He watched the tiny muted threads of necromancy curling from the crystal, probing the enchantments and wards that Jin had woven around it. As long as the phylactery remained whole, it would try to regrow the lich.
But you don't want to?
I don't know if I do, said Jin. He was a horrible father, no doubt,
but I remember he was different with mother around. And for years after she died, for most of my early memories, it was just me and him against
the world, really. It'd be one thing to kill him in battle, but now he's helpless. And through the phylactery, I can sense his feelings. Sorrow, anger, fear, a bit of paternal pride, much to my surprise, and even remorse.
Laruna shook her head and gestured toward the hole in the wall in the ruined square.
None of that changes what he's done here.
No, agreed Jin, which is why I don't know what I'll do.
And you'll just keep the soul of a lich in your pocket until you decide?
I have plenty of experience handling dangerous and forbidden relics, Jin smirked. Father's phylactery would be the third most deadly relic in my study in the chambers of the Red Hawk, at worst.
I suppose.
Laruna tried to hide the subconscious glance at Jin's left hand. He flexed the dead appendage and held it up for her to inspect.
So you did that when you saved my life, said Laruna.
Yes.
And then you hid it from all of us.
Jin shrugged. It's my hand. And my business.
Laruna shook her head.
I just don't understand why you would conceal something like that.
Because I know you, Laruna.
Me?
The Solomancer's brow furrowed.
Did you just assume I'd accuse you of necromancy?
Jin sighed. I knew you'd be angry about my omnomancy, and all the more so that I kept it from you. But I also know that the only thing you hate more than being lied to is being indebted to anyone. If you knew that curing you cost me my hand, you'd feel guilty, and then you'd try to make it up to me by...
He shifted uncomfortably.
By taking me back, I suspect. I didn't want you to be with me, or anyone, because you feel like you have to be, and I won't be anybody's obligation.
The Solomancer glared at him.
You don't know everything.
True enough, said Jin, looking back to Datara's phylactery. But I know that.
It might have been different, said Laruna.
Maybe, but probably not.
I'd still rather you let me decide for myself.
I knew that, too.
Laruna laughed bitterly to herself as she stood.
Well, be that as it may, thank you for saving me. I owe you my life, and I'm grateful for it. All things considered, you've been a good friend.
I'd say we were more than friends.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter what we were. All that matters is what we're trying to be going forward.
The Solomancer smiled at Jin, but he could see the sparkle of tears at the corner of her eyes.
Jin set the pain in his chest into an imaginary box, placed the lump in his throat on top of it, and closed the top.
Agreed, he said with a joyless smile. You're a good friend as well.
Yeah, said Lorena. Come on, let's go help the others find Gorm.
The first thing that Gorm Ingerson was aware of was the stench of decaying meat wafting over his face in noxious waves. He shut his eyes tighter and covered his nostrils with his hand. A moment later, something wet and slimy dragged across his face.
Get off!
He growled through a mouthful of tongue, pushing a muzzle out of his face.
Oh yeah, good boy!
Cobalt paws scrabbled on stone, and now Bert was shouting at someone in the distance,
Hey! Hey, Patches found him!
Gorm fended Patches' affection off long enough to open one eye and look at the kobold picking his way through the wreckage. His muscles burned, and his mouth tasted of blood.
Hey, chum!
Bert crouched into view, a limp cigarette clenched in his grin.
Guess how long you've been passed out for?
Not long enough,
grumbled Gorm, clutching his head. The blood was pounding in his ears, exacerbating a skull-rending headache.
Well, it was at least long enough for the shamans to get the waygate open again, said the kobold. Otherwise, we wouldn't have had old Patches here to sniff you out. He's getting pretty good at finding you.
Lucky me.
Gorm tried shoving the affectionate dog away again, but Patches easily switched from kissing his face to licking his hand. Katha stepped into view.
There's the hero. Still sleeping it off?
I'd like to be, said Gorm. I take it Jin won, then. Oh, he won all right,
Bert said.
Thanks in no small part to you decapitating the lich, added Katha.
Really?
Hints of memories flashed through Gorm's consciousness, too fast and fluid to make any sense of.
I don't recall that. Well, sounds more like you took his body off and left the head behind, from what I hear, said Bert. But there ain't a word for that, and it's the same effect, more or less.
You did it right after you jumped through a wall, if that helps, Katha offered.
Which one?
It occurred to Gorm that between drinking and berserking, he'd spent a regrettable portion of his life blacked out. He shook his head.
Wait, did anybody see it?
Almost everyone saw the old Dwarven Kingdom's army arrive, said Katha,
complete with kobolds, orcs, goblins, and every other kind of shadowkin, added Bert. Half the city was out on the tiers watching us save them.
So Jin had quite the audience when he took down Datar, added Katha.
And the army cleared out the rest of the undead?
Gorm asked.
Well, they definitely would have, said Bert, if there had been a fight.
Most of the remaining dead dropped everything and headed east, said Katha with a shrug. There's an odd lurker here or there, but the guild has issued a few quests to clear them out. Should be all taken care of soon enough.
Gorm couldn't stop his own smile from splitting his face.
So it worked then? Of course it worked,
Bert interjected.
Listen!
Gorm perked up. Over the blood pounding in his ears, he could detect a distant roaring with an exuberant quality.
Sounds like leverage to me, he said, jumping up. Come on, let's go put it to use.
It was often said that nobody knew how to celebrate like the citizens of Andoran, though perhaps it would be more accurate to say that nobody was better situated to throw a party. The city's many tiers formed an inverted amphitheater. Spectacle attracts an audience, but the opposite is also true. The presence of so many eager eyes in one giant stadium of sorts meant that every civic organization in the city was perpetually prepared to put on some sort of show, play, display, or chorus. Andoran was one big festive tinderbox waiting for a spark, and Jin had lit a fire. The sky swirled with rainbow smoke and bright red and blue ribbons, punctuated by bursts of brilliant fireworks. Chants and songs occasionally swelled, only to be swallowed up again in a cacophony of cheering. Bannermen and civilians lined the walls of every tier and the top of every roof, waving flags featuring Andoran's seven-pointed star and screaming down at the army of dwarves and shadowkin. King Forder's royal tent provided refuge from the oppressive jubilation. The heavy velvet canopy had been set up near the ruins of Andoran's main gate, next to the deep trough that the dark spire had carved through the city streets. Like any good dwarven tent, the interior was dark, cool, and as quiet as anywhere could be given the circumstances.
It might have been a relaxing spot, but by the time Gorm and his party arrived at Forder's encampment, members of Andoran's royal guard were already swarming the square. The soldiers barely had time to usher Gorm and his companions into the tent before a herald followed them in and piped the first few notes of the Freedland's anthem on his trumpet. At the urging of a couple dwarves, Gorm hurried to take his place kneeling beside Ashurzu and King Forder. The rest of the party took up positions behind them, where Darak, Jorik, Corgan, and a retinue of dwarves and shadowkin waited patiently. The herald set down his bugle and cleared his throat.
All hail his majesty, the lord of the Freedlands, king of Andoran!
Ha! There's to be plenty of dull ceremony today without the titles, lad. They know who I am.
Johann the Mighty brushed the boy aside as he swept into the tent. The king was clad in his typical suit of golden plate mail, but atypically, he wore an ornate helm with glowing runes around the Y-shaped opening in its face and eagle wings set atop it. The nonplussed herald tried to rally.
And Guildmaster Weaver, nobody cares about Ortson,
said Johann, dismissing the servant with a wave of his hand.
Indeed, sire,
muttered the rotund guildmaster as he crept into the tent. The king planted his mailed fists on his armored hips and puffed out his breastplate as he swept his eyes over the room.
King Forder, Ork, and, ha, Gorm Ingerson, I should have known.
Probably,
said Gorm, his lips pulled back into a smile-like shape.
We welcome you, King Johann, said King Forder, and I appreciate your gracious directness. If I may return the favor, I suggest we get right to our offer.
The human king looked at his advisers, each of whom attempted and failed to shrug inconspicuously. What offer? The dwarven king held out a hand, and an attendant gave him a circlet of iron spikes wrought at odd angles.
The crown of iron thorns. It would be best for Arth if it were stored in your great vault, and as such, I'm willing to sell it at a heavy discount.
What sort of offer is that? Johann snorted. Why would we even discuss such matters today? This will all be settled at the loot arbitration.
I imagine it will, your majesty, said Corgan. But seeing as Andoran won't be represented at the loot arbitration, all parties agreed to offer you the crown for 60% of assessed value.
What?
Johann's voice dropped to a dangerous whisper.
Ludicrous,
snarled Ortson, his jowls shaking in fury.
I won't go below 55%,
said King Forder with a slight smile.
What makes you think the Freedlands won't be at loot arbitration? Said King Johann.
Why would they be?
Asked Forder with saccharine innocence.
Dwarven heroes completed a Ruskin quest, said Corgan. The people of the Freedlands need not concern themselves.
But you saved our city,
snapped Ortson.
A collateral benefit, I'm afraid, said King Forder. Regrettably, our force of heroes isn't eligible to participate in quests for the Freedlands, and as they did the slaying, the only quests that could be completed are those of the old Dwarven kingdoms and Ruskin, even if they wanted to submit paperwork for Andoran's.
They aren't eligible for our quest because they're foes, said Johann.
Are they? Said Forder with relish. These Shadokin were given Dwarven citizenship and enlisted as heroes by my kingdom's guild.
We've the paperwork to prove it, said Corgan.
This is robbery, snarled Johann.
Speaking of which, is that not the Wormwood staff?
Weaver pointed accusingly at Jin.
That's stolen property. It was taken from the Museum of Andoran just over a month back.
No, it's loot, said Jin. I took it from the lich I killed.
Gorm nodded. Whatever came before that is irrelevant.
Ortson scowled.
That's a flimsy defense.
Aye, but you know what isn't? Growled Gorm. A whole city full of cheering people that just saw us saving them from the brink of annihilation. You think they'll care about the paperwork? You think those tired soldiers will go to war with their rescuers over a staff?
Gorm saw Johann's eyes narrow dangerously behind the slits in his golden helm.
This isn't just about the artifacts, is it?
No.
Forder hefted the circlet with a smile. As I've often found, a crown isn't everything. Fine, let's deal. Any trace of Johann's typical exuberance had fled from his voice, replaced with hard determination.
What exactly are you hoping I'll give you?
The Dwarven kingdoms might be willing to make an enlarged payment back to the Friedlands in their time of need, provided we're allowed to renegotiate the terms of our loans, said King Forder.
So be it, said Johan. The clerks can work out the numbers. And then we'll become party to the Lich's hoard?
Oh, my, no, said King Forder. The loot belongs entirely to my kingdom, the Rushkin government, and the heroes that slew the Lich and his army. You might find a way to tax their considerable earnings, of course, but you'd have to negotiate with them.
The Dwarven king nodded to Ashurzu and Gorm.
Bargain with orcs and criminals? Ha!
Johan's laughter was bitter and cold. I don't need your gold that badly, Forder. Weaver Ortsen and a couple of clerks cleared their throats in unison. A trio of Johan's advisors stepped forward to whisper into the king's ear.
What?
Barked Johan, who was to discretion as a rampaging Nurg was to an elven pottery garden.
Well, of course I know what CTOs are. They...
Eh? How much?
Good gods, the business community must be going mad.
Well, how could the kingdom have guaranteed that thrice-cursed sum? We can't afford anywhere near that much.
Ah.
Ah, yes, I suppose that is the point. Right.
Yes.
Burn the thrice-cursed gods, fine! When the paladin turned back to Gorm and Ashurzu, what little of his skin that was visible was crimson and bulging with veins.
And what exactly do you want, orc?
The king half said, half spat. Ashurzu held up a hand, silencing an angry snarl from Darak and the other Shadowkin.
I am Ashurzu Dazgazvarda, daughter to Zerthraka, sister to Char and Darak, chieftain of the Gazvarda. These are the demands of my people.
Bert handed the chieftain a lambskin scroll, which she unrolled with a small flourish.
First, the Friedlands will pardon members of the Red Horde for any alleged crimes predating this agreement. Second, the Friedlands will recognize the citizenship granted by the Old Dwarven Kingdom to our peoples, and once again accept us as legal residents. Third, the Lightlings of the Friedlands will abolish the oppressive NPC system and non-combatant papers in general. Fourth, a public recognition of the innocence of the Gazvarda tribe in the recent theft of the burial stones of Og Magurd, known to your people as the Elven Marbles. Fifth, the Friedlands will cease referring to the burial stones of Og Magurd as the Elven Marbles. Sixth, reparations for property...
Johan threw his arms into the air. How long is this going to take?
Ashurzu's shrug suggested that the meeting could take a while. Her smile said that she was going to enjoy every minute of it.
Gorm lost track of time as the dealings spiraled into a meandering negotiation. The Shadowkin would be reinstated into the Friedlands. Gorm and his party would receive a full pardon and have their ranks restored. In return, they'd pay taxes as normal heroes and agreed to exclude any belongings left in undamaged buildings on Andoran's first two tiers from the loot tally. Beyond those terms and several other broad agreements, the exact nature of the deal was too expansive to cover in a few hours. Proposals were deferred to committees that would be formed at a future date. Of course, that meant that a committee to form the committees was required. The sun was setting by the time the committee to form the committee that would form the committees was decided upon. Finally, it was time to make good on Johan's chief demand.
Stand tall, the king growled as they assembled at the entrance of the tent. Remember that we're all the heroes of Andoran. We all won, ha! And smile, by the gods, they have to see that we're happy about this.
The last instruction was directed at Ortsen Weaver, as most of the Shadowkin and dwarves were already beaming at the terms they'd extracted from Johan's kingdom. The king signaled, and the tent flaps were drawn open. Gorm walked with the procession out of the tent into a maelstrom of adulation. Lanterns of every hue, from amber to lilac, lined the ramparts of Andoran's tiers, and beneath them the city's citizens and denizens screamed their adoration down at their leaders and heroes. They made their way to the broad steps before parading up the stairs, flanked by jubilant crowds, sharing the credit for Andoran's rescue. The victory march had almost reached the palace when Gorm felt a hand on his shoulder.
Here now, Ingerson, I hope you don't think this is over. Johan growled in his ear.
How could it be over?
Gorm spoke from the side of his mouth as he waved at the admirers lining the steps.
Nothing's finished so long as ye and I are both still breathing.
Ha! Good. So long as we understand each other. The paladin slapped Gorm on the back again before they both returned their attention to the celebration. Not everyone in the city was reveling, of course. Fallen bannermen and unfortunate citizens needed to be laid to rest, provided they hadn't walked away. And there was little to celebrate for those base dwellers whose homes and businesses had been in the path of the Dark Spire. Beyond that, many people were simply exhausted after the most harrowing night of the age. Feister Herc counted herself among their number. She let Aubryn push their way through the crowds. Throngs of celebrants filled every street, keeping their movement to a slow crawl. Rex watched the people pass from the cradle of her arms, his leg resting in a splint provided by a kindly priest at the Temple of Oppo. Mrs. Herc occupied her mind planning a letter to Mr. Poldo. He'd want to hear how she and the home fared. The sun was dropping over the ridge when they finally made it back to the third tier. Mrs. Herc was so exhausted that she could barely hold her head up, let alone focus on anything but Aubryn's heels. She just wanted to be back at the home, with all her pups and tenants safe.
Mama, look!
Very nice, Rexar, she said automatically for the 100th time that day.
No, look!
The pup grabbed her jowls and swung her head around. The lowest tiers of Andoran glowed in lantern light, framed by the great archway of Malcolm's Gate. Part of the dark spire was visible through the rooftops of the second tier, as was the huge gouge that it had carved up the base.
It's kind of pretty, if you don't pay the destruction any mind, said Aubryn, staring back at the scene.
Even in her half-dazed state, Mrs. Herc couldn't help but agree. The lanterns sparkled like a reflection of the stars.
Still, there is a lot of destruction, added Aubryn. It will take a long time to rebuild the gates, let alone the city.
And then everything will go back to normal, right, Mama?
Rex said, his tail wagging nervously. Feista couldn't help herself from glancing at her son's leg, still bent and buckled in the splint. The priest had been kind and optimistic, but not so much as to lie when Feista asked her frantic questions. Yes, it was bad. No, you couldn't give a child salve, not with the known risks. No, the magic alone wouldn't fix everything. The fracture had been present too long, the crushing of the bones too complete. Yes, the pup would walk again. Would he run again? That was a harder question.
There will be a new normal, she told her son. Normal is always changing. But we gnolls are a strong people. We will find our way forward. Come on, let's get back to your brother and sister.
Aubryn nodded as she shouldered her way through the crowds again.
Well, be that as it may, I'd hate to be one of the poor wretches who has to figure out how to move that big pillar the lich flung sideways into the gate.
Mrs. Herc laughed as she followed the girl.
You haven't lived here long enough, she said. Mark my words, someone will build a restaurant on top of that stone within a month.